You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
The Law Feature on Classic Business is brought to you by leading full-service law firm Webber Wentzel. Through an alliance with Linklaters and relationships with law firms across Africa, Webber Wentzel ensures that you have the best expertise wherever you do business. Now, today we're going to be talking about the Protection of Personal Information Act, or PAPIA for short. And for those who've been living under a rock, PAPIA is the legislative framework for data protection in the country, which really aims to promote this constitutionally enshrined right to privacy. And how does it do that? Well, by ensuring that companies safeguard personal information or organizations. Now, it's been many years in the making, hence my thinking that if you haven't heard of it by now, you've probably been living on another planet, and it finally comes into effect on the 1st of July, which is on Thursday. And I'm sure you're all being bombarded with last-minute PAPIA compliance emails in your inbox. So we've invited Wendy Tembedza, Senior Associate at Webber Wentzel, to talk to us about the ins and outs of PAPIA and what you need to know. Wendy, welcome to the show. Data breaches feel like they're occurring a lot more frequently. Just internationally, we had the Colonial Pipeline breach. What are the biggest breaches we've suffered recently?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me. Sure. So from a local perspective, one of our bigger recent ones is the Experian breach. Experian is a credit bureau, and it recently suffered, you know, quite a substantial breach. The records of personal information of about 12 million South Africans were stolen, and also personal information relating to 800,000 or so businesses was stolen. And the type of information that was stolen was predominantly credit and income information of the individuals and the businesses. And then also fairly recently, we had the Virgin Active breach. They suffered a ransomware attack, which caused the company to place all of its IT systems offline while they were trying to figure out what the source of the attack was, and of course how to contain it as well. And with the large network of gyms they run across the country, that was about 800,000 member records as well. So potentially the personal information of 800,000 South Africans was at risk in that case. So, you know, often you have the high profile cases which deal with these large record databases, but you also have smaller breaches as well that can be equally as damaging, both to those individuals whose information is compromised, but also to the businesses that have been breached as well.
And I was going to ask you about that, because the big ones grab all the headlines, the Experian one that you mentioned, and you as a consumer can actually go on to Have I Been Pawned? It's a website that was founded by an enterprising Aussie who used to work for Microsoft, and you can see whether or not your personal information was part of one of the major hacks. But say I've sent an email from my company account, small company, without blind seeing the people who would prefer their details remaining confidential. What exactly is a data breach is what I'm trying to get at. What actually counts as a data breach?
Sure. So a breach in the context that it's understood for purposes usually occurs where there's been unlawful or unauthorized access to a record of personal information. So, you know, typically instances of a breach would be where some third party often, you know, gets access to a record of information.
Now, within that, I know the Act speaks of a compromised record. What is a compromised record?
Sure, Randy. So any record that has been accessed in a manner that it's not supposed to have been accessed really is compromised, in the sense that it is now in the hands of individuals who potentially have, you know, a ill intent in relation to that record.
Right. Now, when we look at the implementation date of the 1st July, I know there's been some confusion about whether the Office of the Information Regulator is indeed fully functional yet. Is it? What does it still require to become fully operational and functional, or is it ready to go live on the 1st of July?
Yes, so the Office of the Information Regulator is functional. It is still in the process of filling, you know, certain posts. For example, they recently announced that it's looking at getting individuals to participate in its enforcement committee. But really, for all intents and purposes, the regulator is up and ready, running and ready to go on the 1st of July. There have been some, you know, technical issues with the portal for registering information officers, but the regulator is looking into that and has accordingly adjusted some of the compliance timeframes. But the information regulator is certainly, by all indications, ready to go.
And you mentioned an information officer, because the law, according to PIA, I think, automatically designates a person in each business or organization as the IO, the information officer. What is the process for registering an information officer now with the information regulator?
Yes, so by operation of law, the head of the organization is the information officer, but of course the organization is allowed to delegate that responsibility to another person. As to the registration, the information regulator has set up a portal for registration, but like I mentioned, there have been some technical glitches, and so there is an alternative of submitting the requisite forms via email as well.
And we know the Protection of Personal Information Act grants the information regulator significant powers to summons to appear or give evidence on oath and to produce records, to enter and search. Things like dawn raids come to mind. In what circumstances can and will the regulator actually exercise these powers?
Yes, so essentially in any circumstances where the regulator takes the view that there is a reason to investigate any processing activities that are being carried out by a responsible party, then it has the power to do so, of course, within the scope of its mandate in the Act. So, for example, the regulator can receive a complaint from a member of the public and take the view that there needs to be further investigation of the processing activities, and it can then, as a result, continue to investigate. And then also the regulator is mandated to monitor compliance with the Act, and so it might then exercise its powers in that context as well.
Now, if you look at the responsibilities, clearly with great power comes great responsibility as well, as the saying goes. What are the responsibilities of the information regulator, broadly speaking?
Yes, so again, the regulator is mandated to monitor compliance with the Act. So amongst its duties is to educate the public and responsible parties about PIA-compliant processing activities. And then also it provides guidance to individuals and to responsible parties in this regard. And then also it has to report to Parliament about various processing matters. For example, if it is of the view that certain aspects of the Act need to be updated, then it would report to Parliament and advise accordingly.
Now, you speak of Parliament, and we know in the UK they've got GDPR. How is the information regulator going to dovetail with these other regulatory bodies that we have internationally to ensure compliance and to ensure there's some level of collaboration across border? Because much of the data breaches, when we talk about data breaches, happen in the ether, which is a borderless space.
Yes, so part of the information regulator's mandate is actually to facilitate any cross-border cooperation that might be required for the enforcement of privacy laws. So this would require some level of coordination with regulators in other jurisdictions to facilitate that process. And that might actually lead to, additional guidance being issued by the regulator around how to manage cross-border data transfers once they have a relationship with the appropriate regulators that would then determine a way in which the two jurisdictions can share information in a way that is compliant with the data protection requirements of South Africa and the other jurisdictions.
And here in South Africa, I mean, if we take a consumer-based view here, you are known as the data subject, and if there is a breach, you are entitled to certain remedies. If you find that the data breach was unlawful, what are some of those civil remedies for the data subject if they discover that the information has been compromised?
Sure. So for the main part, a data subject can claim damages in civil court. If the responsible party has breached, for example, one of the 8 conditions of lawful processing in relation to that data subject information. And the Act allows a court to award, the damages based on the loss actually suffered by the individual, but also it is allowed to order aggravated damages as well. And those are determined by the court, and so that leaves a lot of room for the court to determine maybe that the damages should actually be in excess of the actual patrimonial loss suffered by the individual.
So if I find that my information has been leaked via the Experian hack, for example, I've actually got to demonstrate the actual loss, apart from just being pestered by telemarketing companies, for example. I've actually got to demonstrate what that actual loss is, which I think is a healthy counterbalance to frivolous claims being brought. When we look at the cost here from a company perspective, and I'm sure companies are scrambling to they've had a year already, but I think many have been asleep at the wheel, maybe dealing with COVID issues and the like, are now waking up to this 1st of July deadline. What can a data breach actually end up costing a company, and what are the sort of factors that influence the scale of the cost?
Sure. So the regulator can impose a fine of up to 10 million rand in respect of a failure to comply with the act. And, you know, the factors would really include the nature of the breach, the size of the breach, what caused that breach. So, for example, if there was negligence on the part of the responsible party and the like, you know, just a failure to implement basic security controls that could potentially have avoided that breach. So a variety of factors will influence the actual quantum of that fine. But I think more important than the 10 million rand amount is that it's important for companies to note the potential reputational harm that may result if, you know, if customers leave the organization, if they no longer want to receive services from them as a result of the data breach, because that could then affect the long-term prospects of the business. So over and above, escaping liability in the context of the regulator, it's important to manage that because it could have an effect on the bottom line of the business.
So that really comes to our bottom line, because companies now need to be implementing and drafting plans to respond to data breaches and also determining the effectiveness of a company's PAPEA compliance. What's important to bear in mind when it comes to implementing and drafting a plan to respond to a potential data breach?
So I think what's most important is that the plan should take into account all possible risk areas. So that would require a comprehensive assessment of the business's operations and all the risk areas within that business. So this would include all technological risks related to personnel, accessing information, and also any physical risks in the sense of access controls. It's really ultimately about ensuring that once you get to the point of drafting those plans, you have a bird's eye view of all the risks, and you are then able to prepare for the occurrence of such risk with, the appropriate full picture.
And do you advise going through sort of dry runs and drills to kind of do a mock data breach just to see how those plans hold up in a kind of real-world scenario?
Absolutely. A lot of businesses, for their technology systems in particular, do penetration testing, which assists in assessing how secure their online systems are. So they would run a mock data breach, for example, and see how effective their policies and their controls are. So 100% that would then help you determine whether or not the measures implemented are sufficient for the potential risks that you might face.
And then lastly, Wendy, how do you pronounce it? Is it PAPEA or PAPEA?
Sometimes, I must admit, sometimes it's Poppy, other times it's PAPEA. It just depends if I remember that I actually need to call it PAPEA.
Wendy Timbetta, thank you very much. Senior Associate Weber Wenzel, PAPEA, PAPEA, whatever it is here on the 1st of July. And you better ensure that you're compliant. 10 million rand fine at the top end awaits you if you're found to be in breach. The law feature on Classic Business was brought to you, as always, by Weber Wenzel. With over 150 years of experience and deep industry knowledge, Weber Wenzel is the leading full-service law firm on the African continent. Anne Williams has your news up after this.
Knowing that limitations exist and knowing that there are no boundaries to your possibilities, combining knowledge and experience to provide tailored and commercial business solutions, leveraging key relationships with global firm locators and law firms across Africa, that is the value of experience. With over 150 years of experience and deep industry knowledge, Weber Wenzel is the leading full-service law firm on the African continent. See the value of experience at WeberWenzel.com.